From the Berkshires to the Sound, from wherever you live in MLB America, this is Inside the Parker. You give us 22 minutes and we'll give you the scoop on Major League Baseball. Now here's Baseball Hall of Fame voter number 83, Rob Parker.
All right, welcome into Inside the Parker for the 2021 season. Yes, we're excited. And you'll be able to catch the podcast every Thursday. That's when it drops. And, of course, we'll have some of your favorites like Foul Affair, those segments, and a couple of new ones, betting on the bases and things like that as well. But first, let's get you started with getting robbed.
To lead off, it's getting robbed.
And keep him up.
Rob's hot take on the three biggest stories in Major League Baseball.
Number one.
It is opening day. Yes, Thursday, April 1st. There's no April Fool's joke here. Everyone will play in Major League Baseball to start the season on a Thursday. And we cannot wait because we have a full season. This is not 2020. This is not 60 games. We have the full slate, 162 games, and we can't wait. So many good teams out there in Major League Baseball this year. So I'm excited. I know you are, too. So you know what? There's nothing better than hearing play ball.
Number two.
Mets shortstop Francisco Lindor has turned down, reportedly, $325 million long-term contract from the Metropolitans. Instead, he wants a 12-year, $385 million deal. That's his counterproposal. So far, he's balked at the Mets' 10-year contract. And I don't know. I think Lindor is a hell of a player, has a chance to make it to the Hall of Fame. But I don't know if I could pass up 27 years old, $325 million all guaranteed. Remember, he didn't have a great year last year, only batted 258, had 8 home runs, 27 RBIs in the 60 games, so not that great. And he's betting on himself. I get it. He's been a tremendous shortstop. He's won two-time. He's been a Gold Glove winner. He's on track to get to the Hall of Fame, but I think he's taking a huge gamble. He wants that $385 million, and I'm not sure I would not take the $325.
Number three.
All right, here's my 2021 World Series. That's right, World Series prediction. Man, I'm looking forward to a full baseball season, and I know everybody's talking about the Dodgers, and of course, what they were able to do, adding Trevor Bauer to a team that already won the World Series a year ago. But in the NL West, I'm focusing on the San Diego Padres. The Dodgers have won that division 8 years in a row, but you know what? I'm going against the grain, and I'm going with the upstart Padres. I'm picking the Padres to win the division with the additions of pitchers Blake Snell, Yu Darvish, and Joe Musgrove, all to their rotation. I think that they have a stellar rotation. I love Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado in that lineup, Eric Hosmer and Will Myers. I mean, I can't like this team enough. I get it. On paper, the Dodgers are better. But I'm going to make the big pick of the Padres coming out of the National League for the World Series, beating the Dodgers and getting to the World Series and playing the New York Yankees. I know we're tired of picking the New York Yankees year in and year out, but I must admit this. I can't believe the Yankees will go through another year with the injuries that have piled up the last few years. And they keep making the playoffs, and they keep making playoff runs, but they keep getting banged up and having so many injuries. I believe Judge and Stanton finally stay healthy for a year, and they mash, their pitching falls in line, and the New York Yankees beat the San Diego Padres in the World Series in 2021, this will be an epic World Series with big stars, big names. I can't wait. Fasten your seatbelts. Baseball season is here.
Here comes the big interview. Listen and learn.
Oh, it's so good.
All right, now let's welcome to the podcast Daniel Ponce de Leon, St. Louis Cardinals pitcher who has a new book, One Line Drive, A Life-Threatening Injury and a Faith-Fueled Comeback. And what a story he has. Daniel, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me on here.
Absolutely. And for people who remember your career, you know, you were hit by a line drive. And, you know, it took you 14 months to fully recover from that. But yet you made your first major league start, becoming the fifth pitcher in modern major league history to throw 7 innings of no-hit ball in your first outing. Some people regard it as one of the greatest debuts in Major League Baseball history. But first, take us back to that moment that changed your life and the story you're about to tell us.
Okay. It was May 9th and 2017. It was a day game at Iowa Cubs and kids day too. So it was a bunch of kids there screaming SpongeBob stuff. And second inning rolls around. I have Rosario, a catcher, Caratini hitting. And Rosario calls fastball down and away. I start the ball middle, stays middle. Caratini lines the ball back up the middle and hits me straight in the temple. And I remember the ball spinning. I could see the seams. I just could not react quick enough. And I probably was knocked out for a few seconds. But after that, I remember the catcher, my teammates, my trainer all surrounding me. My trainers asked me questions. I'm able to answer. And initially, I'm thinking it's not too bad. But the trainer does not like the way I'm answering it. So he calls over the stretcher. And I thought that was ridiculous because my neck wasn't broken. And they had me all strapped up and did the whole rollover on your side deal and put me on the stretcher. And then they put me in the ambulance. And then once I got in there, started feeling a little bit worse. And then getting to the hospital, and that's when things started getting real bad for me. And one of the last memories is them shaving my head. And then after that, I'm laying in the hospital bed talking to my dad.
And I mean, obviously, so many things are going through your mind. I mean, obviously, baseball wasn't a part of it. It's about survival at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah. For me, I did not know how bad the injury was to the extent, but for all the other people that are around, they're hoping, one, I was just going to survive the surgery, and then two, they were hoping that I wouldn't have to re-go in for surgery because then I would have disabilities. And then once I did get clear of that, they're hoping that I did not have any disabilities. They were hoping I could walk, talk, and just eat again. And no one really was thinking about baseball at the time.
And talk about making that recovery, your faith, your friends, your family. How important was that to need that in order to make it through such a traumatic situation?
The people that were around me was essential to my recovery. As for a brain injury, it's not something you can rehab. You know, like you hurt arm, leg, or something, you go through protocols after a certain time and you start rehabbing. Well, for the brain, all it was swelling. So all you can do is sit there and wait until the swelling goes down in your brain. And so I had 3 months to myself of just, you know, sitting there. Not much activity was allowed. You know, I was able to go for walks, kind of toss the tennis ball around for my dog. But otherwise, you know, you're just left to yourself with your own thoughts. So I took that time to really dive into my faith. I was unsure where my soul would have gone if I would have died at that time. You know, I was a Christian, but I would be a lukewarm one at best.
Yes.
And so I decided to really dive into that during those 3 months and thereafter.
And then July 23rd, 2018, you make your major league debut for the St. Louis Cardinals. Tell me what that was like. What went through your head when you took the mound for the first time, you know, wearing a St. Louis Cardinals uniform and you're in the big leagues?
The great Lord delivered me. He answered prayers, many of prayers, not just mine, but many other people in my life have prayed for me. Even people I hardly knew prayed for me. And that outing I recall is probably one of the most peaceful and focused outings I've ever had. You know, nothing really could have fazed me. I wasn't worried. It wasn't too high. It wasn't too low. It was just right. And that was my prayer previous to going out there. And I said exactly what I received when I was out there.
And talk about playing for the St. Louis Cardinals. I call St. Louis the baseball capital of the United States. I don't think there are better baseball fans anywhere, and there are a lot of great baseball fans. L.A., the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Red Sox, you know, the Cubs. But St. Louis is the greatest baseball city. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. It is the baseball city. And those fans, they are unbelievable. When I was recovering at home, St. Louis, the Cardinals, they put out these two huge whiteboards, one in the clubhouse and then one out in the stadium for fans. And both groups, the big league players who I hardly knew, they didn't really know me. I hadn't been called up yet. And even the random fans who walked through the stadium, they all signed in and wrote nice things to me. I received a ton of letters in the mail from Iowa Cub fans, the St. Louis Cardinal fans, from left and right, people who didn't even know me. They were there to, like, stay behind me, and that meant a lot.
Give us a preview of the Cardinals this year. I mean, the Cardinals have always always competed, always tried to make moves to try to win a division and, get back to the World Series. How are you feeling about your team this season?
Couldn't be more excited. This is probably one of the best teams that I've ever been around, personally. I will give props to the Cardinals front office. They've assembled a group of guys that I would call professionals, just good people, good at what they do, and just good all around. Like, everyone's great. Everyone loves each other. There's not one bad egg in the clubhouse. And props to the Cardinals for that.
And they did steal Nolan from the Rockies, didn't they?
Yeah, definitely. We stole him, and he fits right in. He's already a Cardinal before the first game of the season. That guy is, I mean, you couldn't tell. He looks like he's been here for years. He's a savvy guy. He fits right in, and he's going to be good for us.
There you go. All right. The name of the book is One Line Drive, A Life-Threatening Injury and Faith-Fueled Comeback. And we appreciate you, Daniel Ponce de Leon. And good luck to you and the Cardinals this season. Thanks so much for joining the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me on here.
It's time for the Pocket Protector Centro. The analytic numbers you need to know. Well, maybe.
Anthony Masterson is his name. BS Analytics is his game. What do you got for me, Anthony?
The 2021 season is finally here, and for the first time in over a year, it sure seems like there is some semblance of light at the end of the tunnel. And in MLB, certainly no shortage of storylines. The Dodgers trying to be the first team this century to repeat as champs, while the Yankees are looking at their longest World Series drought in over 30 years. But I'm here to talk about the kids, the next generation of stars. Let's start with the richest of them all, Padres shortstop Fernando Tatis Jr., who signed a whopping 14-year, $340 million deal this offseason with only 143 career games under his belt. Now, Tatis has popped at an early age. Among NL players under 23, only three others have a higher career OPS than Tatis's 956 mark. Albert Pujols, Mel Ott, and the Nationals' Juan Soto. Yes, Soto, the 22-year-old wonderkind who burst onto the scene in the 2019 postseason, leading his Nats to their first title in franchise history. Last year, at age 21, he led the NL in average, on-base percentage, OPS, and intentional walks. And his 972 career OPS, only behind Ted Williams, Jimmy Fox, and the aforementioned Ott among all players before turning 22. Now, Soto has had to share headlines with his NL East rival Ronald Acuna Jr., whose MLB debut not coincidentally coincided with the Braves' three straight division titles. Acuna is one of only five players in MLB history with 80 homers and 60 steals before turning 23, joining some guys named Trout, A-Rod, Griffey, and Andrew Jones. Decent company. Now, the smiles and the swag these guys exude are infectious. Baseball should be a fun game, and these guys are doing their best to prove that youth isn't wasted on the young.
And what that ball is.
It was a big week in the big leagues.
I don't believe it! My, oh my!
Is it foul or is it fair? And now, here's ShadowLeague.com MLB insider, J.R. Gamble.
Each week, J.R. Gamble will, of course, tackle a foul or fair situation in Major League Baseball. But for the start of the 2021 season, he will discuss players to watch out for.
Spring training brings new hope, new players, and new expectations. Here's the players I'm keeping real hard in 2021. At first base, Nationals offseason acquisition Josh Bell had a breakout season with 30 homers in 2019. Then he caught a COVID slump in 2020 and was gone. Look for him to have an incredible bounce-back season. At second base, Marlins' Jazz Chisholm. He won the second base starting job, adding some more spice to that Marlins lineup. He's got crazy drip and sick tools, so he's sure to grab some eyeballs as a potential 2020 guy this season. Third baseman to watch out for. Pirates third baseman, Ke'Bryan Hayes, the son of Charlie. He was awesome in his 2020 stint, and everyone's looking forward to a full season as he mashes, and he's nifty with the web, and maybe he gives Pirates a boost. At shortstop, Gold Glover J.P. Crawford. He became the 17th black infielder to win a Gold Glove. You got to watch this guy. He joins a short list of black shortstops to win one. Guys like Ozzie Smith, Jimmy Rollins, Derek Jeter, players of that ilk. Let's see if his bat elevates. In the outfield, Kyle Lewis will follow up his rookie season with 162 games of pure dopeness. You see the new Torii Hunter? You got to watch this guy. Will he go 25-25 this season? And of course, Stanton and Judge. Can they stay healthy together and lift the Yankees to that elusive World Series? If I have to look at a young pitcher, I'm very interested in how Jordan Hicks rebounds from his arm injury in St. Louis. The dude was lights out and among save leaders before his season got cut short. The season's popping. I'm ready to go. Check out these guys. Watch for them inside the Parker.
Turn money into more money.
Now it's time for Betting on the Bases with Dave Gascon.
Love that money.
Love that money.
Dodgers open things up with the Colorado Rockies in the Mile High City. Four-game series, game number one, the over-under total is 11.5. I'm pounding the over and not looking back. Keep in mind, Dodgers hit 31 home runs during the spring in 28 games. Corey Seager jacked 8 of them, and he's playing for a brand-new contract. Back here in California, Angels greet the Chicago White Sox to town for a four-game series as well. White Sox were a surprise team back in 2020. They have a lot of live bats. And on the other side for the Halos, Shohei Ohtani had a blistering spring. I think he rides that into the regular season. These games will be competitive, but look for the over-under total of 8.5 and take the over. Arizona's offense is kind of hit or miss. San Diego's not so much. I think the Padres take 3 of 4 this weekend. Rob, I think the theme early on this season will be offense. Dodgers, Yankees, Mets, and Padres. Keep an eye on what they do early on and look more at the run totals than the juice when they're the favorite.
When Rob was a newspaper columnist, he lived by this motto. If I'm writing, I'm ripping. Let's bring in a writer or broadcaster, old or new.
All right, now let's welcome in author Cam Perrin, who has a new book out called Comeback Season. It's on sale now, Gallery Books, and it's a story of friendships formed between Cam when he was then a teenager, a white baseball obsessed guy from Boston, and hundreds of former professional Negro League players. Cam, welcome to Inside the Parker. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Rob. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And the book is fascinating that you helped claim thousands of dollars, some even topping $100,000 for pensions from former Negro League players from MLB. How did you get involved in this? And tell us about your journey.
So I started out as just a young baseball fan in Boston, Red Sox win the World Series in 2004. And my immediate thought is, you know, I want to start collecting a bunch of Red Sox related memorabilia. I met a couple of the Red Sox players, David Ortiz and Johnny Damon, at various events around Boston, often waiting 4 or 5 hours to meet them. So I began kind of a little collection of various memorabilia, baseball cards, autographs. And then in 2007, a friend of mine introduced me to collecting autographs through the mail. And I quickly realized, much like waiting 5 hours to meet David Ortiz, none of the new players or the modern players would reply through the mail. The players from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, the guys who had long been retired, they were the ones who would write back. So I'd go on a website called sportscollectors.net. You would see who would reply and who wouldn't. I'd send to these old-time guys like Duke Snyder, Al Kaline, Bobby Doerr, send them a couple baseball cards that I would pick up at a memorabilia show or a local store, and write a handwritten letter and self-addressed stamped envelope. And in a couple weeks, I'd often get them back.
Cam, how did you get the interest as a young guy for the Negro Leagues? You knew nothing about it. This happened a long time ago. How did that pique your interest?
So I had known about the Negro League, just being a baseball fan and, you know, into the history. But when Topps came out with a baseball card set called Allen and Ginter in 2007, they had about 5 or 6 baseball cards of former Negro League players who were still alive, who were in the set. So I had bought a couple packs here and there at Target and local baseball card stores, and I got a couple cards of guys like Stanley Glenn and John Mule Miles, and I found their addresses online. Me and a couple guys said, oh, hey, you know, we should send these cards out, write to these guys and see if they'd sign. So I sent out to them, and, you know, I got replies quite fast. And John Mule Miles, for example, wrote, you know, a several page long handwritten letter. From there, I was like, wow, like the major league players, they would just sign your card, send them back. It just felt like they were going through the motions. Yeah, I'd get an autograph, cool. But these letters were just amazing. And I realized that there was so much more history and so much to uncover in speaking with these players. So I began writing to more players who didn't have baseball cards. And then I kind of hit a roadblock. I had written to a couple dozen guys, and I didn't really have any other addresses to send to. So I began reaching out to other researchers, and one man in particular would give me a couple addresses here and there. And then a few players started calling me on the phone, writing letters back and forth to me, and these little kind of friendships via letter and phone started to blossom. And from there, I began speaking to these guys all the time on the phone, and I kind of realized that none of them had stayed in touch with their former teammates. None of them had any baseball cards. Most didn't even have any pictures of them playing in the Negro League in their uniform. You could have played 5, 6 seasons in the Negro League, not had a photo of you in your uniform. And they had no newspaper articles, nothing that really tied them to their career. Some guys would have a couple here and there, but for the most part, you play a game in North Carolina on Saturday. By Sunday morning, you're in Virginia and you never see that paper. You know, so if you had a great game and a great write-up, you never saw that. So I began trying to find all those things, trying to find their former teammates by going on whitepages.com. Trying to find old newspaper articles. Sometimes it would be a really old, grainy picture of them that they hadn't seen before. And then lastly, the pension thing, that came on a little bit later when I began working real close with a fellow researcher in Texas. And the way that works is Major League Baseball agreed to this pension program where if you played 4 years in the Negro League, you would get a pension of $833 a month, which is $10,000 a year, plus back pay to when the program was created, which they put back to around 2005-ish, I believe. So in order to get this pension, you need to find 4 years of primary source documentation, and that's where the hunt began.
I got you. Now, tell me about 2010. You were 15 years old, and you guys and a fellow group of researchers, you guys organized the first annual Negro League Players Reunion in Birmingham, Alabama. What was that like?
It was pretty crazy. I was this young kid, and I had become very close with this Dr. Ravel, who was a a white doctor in Texas who was in his late 50s at the time, and a second man, Chef Clayton Sherrard, who's a chef from Birmingham, who was a former bat boy with the Birmingham Black Barons in the 50s. So the three of us began getting really close over the phone, and we kind of realized, well, hey, you know, Cam has located a lot of these former players. By that time, by 2010, I had been doing this for about 2.5 years with the Negro League players, and I had tracked down probably 50 to 60 plus players through white pages and all sorts of weird online phone books, and we had all become quite close. And Dr. Revelle and Chef knew a bunch of players from their years of working with former Negro League players, and Chef Clayton knew a bunch of guys in Birmingham. So the three of us kind of pooled our resources of players, and they planned out all the logistics, and I just began calling all my newfound buddies who were 60, 70 years older than me and invited them down to Birmingham, and everybody showed up. And we had this week-long event. I took a week off of school at my sophomore year of high school, and we had, I would say, 60-plus players show up. It was amazing.
All right, Cam, his new book is called Comeback Season. It's on sale now. Cam, people can pick it up everywhere?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, most independent bookstores.
All right. Well, congratulations on the book, and we look forward to it. Thanks for joining Inside the Parker. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Batter up!
It's Jones in for Baseball. A fan's take on the game we love.
You're out!
I believe that for the majority of this upcoming 2021 MLB season, that this is, in fact, the year that Aaron Judge will be able to stay healthy. In order for the Yankees to accomplish various goals, such as winning the AL East, advancing to the World Series, and then winning the World Series, they need Aaron Judge to be that key piece in the puzzle to make all the other surrounding pieces fall into place. Although he's only played in 63% of the 384 games over the past three seasons, whenever he's on the field, he's an absolute game changer. In that same time span, he's been on pace to have an OPS plus 140, as well as hitting over 40 home runs. However, it's a difference between being on pace for something and then actually accomplishing something. In a spring training press conference, Aaron Judge mentioned working smarter rather than harder this offseason. He spoke about modified workouts, less bench pressing, and more yoga. I feel as if though that will pay off for his durability for this upcoming 2021 MLB season.
Now bring in the closer.
Strike one.
Strike two.
Strike three.
He's out.
Here's why MLB is better than the NFL or NBA. And it isn't even close.
It's not even close. Opening day of baseball is huge. It's just a sign of spring to come. It just, the weather warms up. People feel good about it. And yes, the crack of the bat. So here is my annual ode to opening day. So much of my love for baseball started at an early age. And my family knew how much I loved baseball. Even my mom, who was a stickler for school and about getting your work done. But when I was in junior high school, my mom used to write a fake doctor's note for me so that I could leave school early, so that I could get home to watch the Mets. On opening day, I had to see the first pitch of the season on TV. I couldn't come home in the third or fourth inning. I had to see it from the beginning. And back then, I was a Mets fan. I wasn't a reporter. I was a fan. Opening day that stands out to me the most dates back to college, 1983. I was a student at Southern Connecticut State University. Me and my three buddies, we hopped in the car. We barely had money for tickets, but we had to see Tom Seaver return to the Mets. We drove from New Haven, Connecticut. And I can remember standing up in our seats in the bleachers and watching Tom Seaver walk from the bullpen and to the mound. What a moment it was!
Meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets.
in the words of New York TV legend, the late Bill Jorgensen, thanking you for your time this time until next time. Rob Parker, out.
He can't get it. This could be an inside to Parker.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.